All right. Welcome to what will hopefully be the end of Perek Zayin, the end of chapter 7. Maybe not, but we'll try. We have already seen the way the Jews entered this Perek, the way they were all confident and convinced that Hashem was on their side and that they're going to succeed and Hashem is with Yehoshua. We saw Yehoshua send people to investigate the area. They don't investigate the whole area. They just investigate the city of Ai. They recommend that he sends 2,000, 3,000. He sends 3,000, and they are routed. And he turns to Hashem, and he complains to Hashem. He really, there were a few different arguments that he made, but he seems to say, you know, I regret that you even sent me. And we noted shades of some of the things that Moshe had said after the Egel and at other times in Yahushua's comments. And Hashem responds to Yahushua in Pasuk Yud, sentence 10, Vayomer Hashem al Yahushua kum lach. Hashem says, get up for yourself. And the word lach, we noted, admits of a couple of different interpretations. One approach is that there's a rebuke. This is all because of you. You should have led the nation. Lama Zatanofel Panecha, why are you falling on your face? Echoed Hashem's comments to Moshe when the Jews were at the sea, when he said, Matitzak Eli, why should you cry out to me? Daberel b'nei Yisrael v'yisrael, speak to the Jews and let them go forward. So what does Hashem want him to do? Here he doesn't say go forward, go back to war. He says, you have a job to do. Chata Yisrael, Pasuk Yud Aleph, sentence 11. Hashem says, Israel has sinned. Note, he doesn't say Achan has sinned. He says Israel has sinned. Just like we saw in the beginning of the Perek, when it said that the Jews as a whole had sinned, taking from the Cherem. So he says, Chata Yisrael, chapter 7, sentence 11. V'gam avru es brisi, asher tzivisi osam. And they also violated the covenant that I commanded them. So when we read this last week, we noted that there's a whole series of gams here. In fact, what you'll see is Chata Yisrael, the Jews have sinned, and then you get five gams after that. So one of them is they violated the bris, the covenant. V'gam lakchum min acherim, and they took from the spoils. V'gam ganvu, and they stole. That's the third. V'gam kichashu, they lied. V'gam samu b'chleihem, and they put it in their vessels. So this line is difficult in terms of the gams. It's also difficult in terms of understanding what we're actually saying. Because you say they stole, right? That refers to taking from the cherim. That I'm good with. Then you say, kichashu, they lied. So I don't know what lie was involved here. And then you say, samu b'chleihem, they put whatever they stole into their vessels. Presumably that was with the theft. So why does it appear after the reference to lying? So this is a very odd sentence. The Gemara in Sanhedrin actually says that the five gams is they violated the five chumashim, which requires some explanation as to what the five chumashim have to do with taking from the spoils. But Radak, Mitzudas David, and Malbim offer similar comments. There's some variety between them, but basically similar comments to suggest that what we're trying to do here is to lay out what makes the sin so bad. So Chata Yisrael is they've sinned. Avru Brisi, they intentionally, knowingly violated a covenant. This wasn't an accident. They knew they weren't supposed to take, and they took. V'gam lakchu min hacherim, and they took from the spoils, means they violated the Navi's command. The cherem is a funny word in that you can use it to refer to that which is supposed to be destroyed. You could also use it to refer to the decree of putting it in cherem, so to speak, of declaring that it's supposed to be destroyed. And here, the commentators take it as the latter. They took from this, violating the Navi's command, this decree of cherem. V'gam ganvu, and they stole. So we already know that because it said lakhu, that they took. So what are you adding with ganvu? There are two different words in Hebrew for the crime of stealing from somebody else. Right? What are those words? Ligzol is one, and lignov. What's the difference?
One's with intent, one's without.
Both with intent.
Right. One is physical, one is not physical, not intentional.
Don't think so.
Like that or something like that.
Well, Gneva Dad is used that way, but that's actually, it's a function of the difference between them, but it's not the difference itself. The difference
between
Gneva is if a person steals by sneaking to take something without being noticed. That's Gneva. Gezela is you walk up to the person and you grab the item by force. So that does tie into the distinction, but that's the core distinction between the two. So that the Torah says, when it comes to Gneva, a person has to pay double if they when they get caught. When it comes to Gezela, they do not. What's the difference? Why should Gneva warrant paying twice, but Gezela does not?
You didn't fear God, but you feared man.
Exactly. The person who takes forthrightly, just because I'm more powerful than they are, and therefore I can take this from them, is not granted that it's a sin against God, but at least they don't fear people more than they fear God. They're breaking all the rules. Whereas when you're dealing with Gneva, they're saying, I'm afraid of human beings catching me. I'm not afraid of God. Or, alternatively, I'm afraid of human beings catching me, and I believe that God doesn't see. However you slice it, they've done something worse to God, and therefore there's a double payment when it comes to that. So here, Begam Gonvu, commentators suggest that it's an emphasis on Gneva. They hid it from people, right? They hid it from people. They're not concerned about what God sees. That's the idea of
it's saying because nobody knew that he stole it.
Exactly.
So he went behind the door.
Exactly. Then ki chashu refers to lying. When is there lying? So the commentators suggest that basically it means achan when he lies, as you'll see, about having taken it. He denies initially having taken it. So that's the lie. And then samu bichlehem, they put it in their vessels, is a way in which it's even worse. And the idea that it's even worse is because they didn't take something they needed to use. They took something and put it in storage. Because you'll see what the items are. Right, so apparently not. Maybe they were waiting. They were waiting for the shul dinner. I don't know. They didn't actually use it. No.
They can say here that he denied it before he even denied it.
Yeah. So that's a little strange, isn't it? So some suggest no, he was lying about his whereabouts when he stole it, as part of his act of deception was that he lied to others in order to be able to get it. Mm-hmm. That's another suggestion for it. But you're right. Otherwise, we're sort of indicting in advance. True. But that's the list of sins that are involved. V'lo yachlu b'nei Yisrael lakum lifnei avayhem. And Hashem says, the Jews are not going to be able to stand before their enemies. Lakum lifnei avayhem. Oref yifnu lifnei avayhem. They will turn the back of their neck to their enemies. In other words, they're going to run away. Ki hayu l'cherem. They themselves have become for the cherem. Cherem here has a double meaning. It could mean that they're going to be destroyed, as in destroyed by their enemies, or they've become like the cherem they have in their possession, which would fit the rest of the pasuk. Lo siv le'yosi machem. Hashem says, I won't be with you anymore. Im lo sashmidu hacherem mikir b'chem. Unless you get rid of this cherem item, you have to eliminate it from your midst. Hashem says, I won't be with you until you right this wrong. And that feeds into something that we said last week or the week before, that really what we're talking about, the fate that befalls the Jews here, is not an act of punishment. It's not God zapping them with lightning because somebody took from the spoils. And the proof of that is that Achan himself didn't get hurt. What's happening here is Siluk Hashgacha. Hashem says, I'm no longer going to travel among you and take care of you and watch out for you. That's emphasized here in this pasuk when he says, Lo Sifli Osi Machem, I won't be with you. You can go to war with I if you want, but you're on your own. Right? Until you get rid of the spoils, you aren't worthy of having Hashem in your midst. That's what needs to be done, is simply to make this right. And so he tells Yoshua, in Pasuk Yud Gimel, Kum Kadesh Esa'am. It's literally prepare or sanctify the nation. You could read it either way. Remember that the verb or not necessarily a verb, but the word kuf dalet shin in Hebrew refers to something that is dedicated for a particular purpose. It doesn't have to be what we think of in terms of Beis HaMikdash and Hekdesh and Kedusha and holiness, as much as something that is dedicated for a particular function. So he says, dedicate the nation, prepare the nation. Ve'amartan, you should say to them, Hiskadushu l'machar, prepare for tomorrow. Kicho amar Hashem Elokei Yisrael, because so says God, Cherem bikir b'cha Yisrael, the cherem is in your midst. Lo suchal lakum lifnei oyvecha ad hasirchem hacherem bikir b'chem. You will not be able to stand before your enemy until you have eliminated this cherem. Sorry? Yeah, but before he said it to Yoshua. Now he's telling Yoshua, this is what you should tell the nation. You know, sometimes the leader is told one thing, but he's not told necessarily to report that to the nation. It may not be healthy. In this case, they need to understand the ramifications of what's been done. They need to grasp what's at stake in order to write it and make sure it's not repeated. So therefore he says, make sure to tell the nation, you won't win a battle until you get rid of this cherem. V'nikravtem b'boker l'shivtechem. You can stop me, by the way, with questions and stuff along the way. I'm just going to read through otherwise. V'nikravtem b'boker l'shivtechem. In the morning, so after this day of preparation, in the morning, you are going to draw near in your shvatim, in tribes. Draw near to what? V'nikravtem, no, he's speaking to the nation. This is what Yeshua tells the nation.
Like each tribe.
Maybe the nation comes close to Yeshua. It's going to whisper secrets.
Well, how are they doing this? They're doing.
We don't know. I mean, you don't have a picture. They're drawing close to something.
Each tribe comes up to himself, to Yeshua.
So the answer could be it's to Yeshua. Draw near to Yeshua. We're going to see that it seems to involve, certainly according to the Mefarshim, the commentators about what's going on here, that it's drawing near to the Mishkan somehow, and Yoshua is there with them. But you will draw near in the morning in tribes. V'haya hashevet asher yilkidenu Hashem, the tribe that Hashem will catch, yikrav la'mishpachot, they will then have to draw near in families.
Is this reference to what we learned before, that we pulled out the whole lineage of...
Exactly. I'm going to come back to that in a second. So they're going to now draw near in families.
Question, and here it says picks, and it has such a different connotation.
Yeah. I don't know why they say pick. Yilkod in the Hebrew is very clearly a word for trapping. Mm. Malkodet is a snare, is a trap. Right. So I don't know why they say pick in their translation. Anyone have a different translation?
Singled out.
That really doesn't fit.
That is
okay.
Smart.
Yes.
Well, you're all using the same position.
That would be
for what word?
For Yilkod or Yilkidenu in Pasuk Yedalet. The one who God will.
Singles out.
Okay.
That's what he uses.
Okay. I still think it means to catch or to grab.
Such more positive.
Well, it's a good thing to be picked, right? It's not a good thing to be singled out.
Right.
Certainly not a good thing to be caught. Nonetheless, let's see what happens. The families are going to draw near. The family that gets caught then, singled out, picked, they're now going to come forward, but in households. And then, and then, the family... The men of that family are going to draw near. The assumption is it's a male who's done this.
Women don't sin.
Oh, for sure. That's been the theme throughout the Midbar. method of catching the thief. And then in Pasuk Tatvav, in sentence 15, Vayahan el kad bacherem, the one who's caught with the cherem, Yisareif ba'esh, will be burned in fire. Oso, ves kol asher lo, him and everything he has. Ki avar es bris Hashem, because he has violated the covenant of God, v'chi asan v'ala b'Yisrael, because he has committed this terrible thing in Israel. Okay.
The Bible said he doesn't How come does
he?
He gets killed in the war.
Right, he didn't get hurt in the war. In other words, when if there was really a punishment for if losing the war to Ai was God zapping them because of this sin, Amalek should have been the first one on the firing line.
Okay.
Yeah, that was my point there.
At this point, shouldn't he just volunteer?
So,
he doesn't know yet.
Well,
what do you mean he doesn't know?
Right now, Hashem has told Yoshua, say this to the nation.
Yeah,
right,
Yoshua.
I thought we said he's already saying it to the nation.
No, Hashem is speaking to Yeshua and telling him, say this to the nation.
Okay.
Yeah, you'll see. It's very, no, because it's a very interesting thing. You have to watch what happens with this, but with this communication. But first of all, what exactly is supposed to be happening here? When he says, draw them near and they're going to get caught, and like, what are you talking about here? So take a look on your sheet, please, at source number one. This is Radak. Amru, he says, they said, meaning the sages, ki ha'aviram lifnei ha'aron, that Yeshua passed them before the Aron of Hashem, right, the one with the luchos in it. V'hanil kad, and the one who was caught, hu shahaya ha'aron kol to, was the one who was caught by the Aron, by the ark. What does that mean? Shalo ha'yachol lazuz misham, he couldn't budge. Like, they're all passing in front, and suddenly someone can't move.
It's important.
Like in the
literally
caught. Like shopping cart out of the parking lot.
Yeah, exactly. Your shopping cart will freeze. That's exactly. Has anyone tried that?
No.
Just curious.
It was.
Oh, okay. I know. I always wondered.
Really? Yeah. It's in winters if you try to take it out the door.
Okay, so this is the first one.
Yes,
man, this would be different if I gave it to men. Okay.
Never come up.
So they're all caught in front of the Aron. There is discussion in the commentaries on this as to whether it means the whole Shevet is really passing in front or whether there's a representative who passes in front. But the Aron catches somebody, can't move. That's one explanation that's brought. Va'od Amru, and they also said, ki ha'amid kol ha'shvatim lufnei ha'urim v'hatumim, that he put all the shvatim in front of the Urim v'tumim. The Urim v'tumim is the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol that he wears, that has the gems representing each of the shvatim. Ve'avnei ha'choshen ha'yuksuvim bo shemos ha'shvatim, and on, really next to, the stones on the choshen, you have the names of each tribe recorded. U'misha avno keha hu ha'nilkad, and the one whose stone dimmed was the one who was caught. And the idea is that the gem has some kind of an internal light to it, and one of them grows dimmer. That's the one representing the one who's been caught. The keha of Nosha Yehuda, and Yehuda's gem was the one that dimmed. And then he continues and he says, "V'ladat hamishpachot v'agvarim, to know the families and to know the individual males, asu bekilfi al pi agoral, that was done via lottery. So the shvatim were via the choshen. But once you finish that level, you can't now do everybody else via the choshen because the choshen is based on the gemstone Reuven Shimon. That's useless once you're past the Shevet Levi." The Shevet level. So to know the families and the individuals, you had to then do a physical lottery. So it's a mix of supernatural first, and then natural. Interestingly, the Gemara in Sanhedrin doesn't do this. If you take a look at source number two, the Gemara very clearly emphasizes that it's a natural thing. Halach v'hipil goralot. He simply did lots. It doesn't deny that it could have been, the Shevet could have been with the Choshen. But the Gemara just presents the lottery. V'nafal ha-goral al-achan. And the lottery falls on Achan. And that, watch what Achan says to him. This is going to be important as we go through the story. Amar lo, Achan says, Yehoshua, b'gorala taba'alai. You're coming to me with a lottery. Ata ve'elazar ha-kohen shnei gedolei adoratem. You and Elazar are the two leaders of the generation. Elazar, son of Aharon, is the Kohen Gadol. Yehoshua is the political leader, right? Imani ma'apkil alechem goral. If I did a lottery between the two of you, one of you is going to turn up guilty. Like, it had to be somebody. How do you know that I'm actually guilty of anything, right? It's the weakness in doing a lottery system. You follow the problem.
Someone has to get the short stick.
Yeah. I mean, okay, so the terminology that's used in terms of goral doesn't really tell us exactly what that means. The term Radak used is more informative. Radak says I did a goral with a kilfi. Kelfi is a term for, it's not well, it could be. I'm going to take it the way I think it means. There are a couple of ways you could take the kelfi. I believe it comes from the term cloth. Like you had chips or pieces of parchment or something with the different names written on it. Like in this case, it could be that all of them are blank except for one that says guilty, right? And you stick them in a box, and then each person has to put their hand in, so someone's going to come up with the one that says guilty. I get that version of this from what's done in the Gemara in Yuma regarding the Sar LaZazel and the Sar LaShem. Remember, they have these two goats that are brought on Yom Kippur. One of them is the Karban Chatas, and the other one is the one that's sent off into the wilderness. And there, it's Tarach B'Kilfi, they actually had a box, and they shook the box, and then the Kohen Gadol sticks in his hand and pulls one out and, you know, announces what that one is, and he pulls out the other one and announces what that one is, one of them being LaShem and one of them being LaZazel. So it's the same sort of an idea. With what we're seeing here.
Is it supposed to be accurate?
Well, the randomness is supposed to help you. In other words, no one pointed a finger to somebody and said, he's the guilty one, but instead we left it up to God. In other words, God is going to make sure that the right one comes out. But of course, Achan says to him, someone's going to, you could just as easily have nobody be guilty, but someone's going to pull up the chip saying, guilty. So it's not fair, is his challenge. So we have to come back to that. But that's the natural, it's supernatural on the one hand, and natural on the other.
I don't know.
Well, I don't mean natural in the sense of
the gem lightning.
Right. I don't mean natural in that sense. I mean less visibly miraculous. Although, yes, if you believe that it's the right one who's being pulled out, then I guess, yes, that's miraculous.
I mean, are you saying, of course, someone's going to be guilty? Well, that's the point. Someone is guilty.
But he's saying, two people, and it's between them, one of them would be guilty, even though they're not.
And they're both tzaddikim, so... Take like the two most amazing people in the generation.
Achan could just
to do a lottery against them.
No, he's not. He's saying that imagine that I did a lottery. Imagine that the Jews just lost the war, and I decided that it's because one of you, the two of you, has sinned. And I did a lottery between the two of you. So, you know, you were a Lazar who was going to turn up guilty. But you could be making this whole thing up. That's essentially what Achan is charging. He's not the type of person who's going to surrender in the name of, you know, the nation. Yeah, that's what it sounds like. That's his challenge. And so we'll see what happens with that. But first of all, the burning thing. So we're going to come back to the burning. I want to come back to that when it actually happens. But the statement here in this pasuk in sentence 15, Tevav, is why is this going to happen to him? Ki avar es bris Hashem, because he violated the covenant of God. And he has done this devastating thing or repellent thing in Israel. In other words, there are two different elements here. He deserves a harsh punishment. This is Abarbanel's idea. Because not only did he take from God, but he caused the Jews to lose their confidence. Because remember Yoshua's point in the beginning of this story. It's not just that they lost to Ai. They're not going to go to war with anybody again. Because they don't have any confidence anymore. They're afraid that they're going to be defeated all over again. What fascinates me about this stage in the story is that, remember, this hasn't happened yet, right? These are the instructions. We just concluded the instructions Hashem gave Yoshua. God knows who did it. Right? I hope so, because otherwise the lottery truly is random. So, God knows who did it. Why doesn't he just tell Yoshua? Just say to him, like, yes, there's a problem.
It's a situation. Well, to show what happens.
It's a whole process.
Yeah.
And it's fear.
Give an opportunity for Shiva, maybe?
Okay, so we have a few ideas here. So, the first possibility is to single him out in front of the nation, but that you could do anyway. God can tell Yoshua, you know, go take this fellow Achan, and, you know, that isn't necessarily. The idea of building up sort of the drama, an anticipation for the nation, like, you know, we're going to watch this play out, I'm not sure what the purpose of doing that is. I mean, it makes for good television, but beyond that, like, why, you know, what's your goal in doing that?
The seriousness of it.
They just lost the war. In terms of the tshuva possibility, that's interesting. By dragging it out, you sort of give him the tshuva possibility.
You need to show the levels of responsibility.
Show the levels of responsibility, meaning?
I mean, like, so you could just single out the individual and say, oh, it's just an individual, and then, you know, not look back. But instead, rather to say, you know, the nation's responsible, the family, the shape is responsible, the family's responsible. Like, kind of just to single, like, meaning, it's very easy to say, oh, he did it, and apply, you know, like, I have nothing to do with it, but rather when you have to focus on each stage of it, it's harder to distance yourself from the faith.
Right. So Aliba is saying actually builds into the whole theme that we've been talking about, right? One of the major themes of this parak was collective responsibility. From the start, where they're all suffering and they're all called sinners because Achan took from the spoils, through to what we're seeing now, and starting also when we saw what TK had mentioned before, he was listed, he was named with the whole family in the beginning of the parak, Achan, son of Carmi, son of Zavdi, son of Zerah, to say. All of them are part of this unit that has sinned. And yeah, I think you can say that here too. We specifically drag it out this way with the Shevet and then with the family and the sub-family and so on to say all of them share in the guilt involved. It's a guilty Shevet. It's a guilty family. It's a guilty household. So I think that does work. Abarbanel takes a practical perspective on this. Take a look at source number 4. I'm going to come back to number 3, but number 4 says, "Kidei sheyivada le'enei ha'am, v'lo yomru krovav sheYehoshua higbilo rashmo me'atzmo," because Yehoshua can't be a part of this process, right? If Yehoshua names him, then it looks like maybe there's some kind of vendetta going. There's something between Yehoshua and Achan. This way, it'll be done supernaturally. Instead of, if, you know, Yehoshua goes to the nation and says, God told me that Achan sinned. That's not going to play. If you do it this way, with this whole in front of the nation thing, and they're frozen in front of the Choshen, then you know, the identification of Achan as the sinner will have greater credibility.
Kind of strengthens the whole, you know, he's really from God, he's the real Nabi.
Also true. Although, not so much in terms of supporting Yehoshua, because it's more against Achan here. In other words, it doesn't help Yehoshua per se. But then take a look at the source I listed as number 3. I have to reverse them. The Gemara in Sanhedrin offers another take, which is problematic, but fascinating. Amar Lefanov. Yehoshua turns to God. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is imagining the conversation between Hashem and Yehoshua. And Hashem said, you know, the Jews have sinned, they've done this. So Amar Lefanov, Yehoshua said before God, Ribono Shel Olam, Master of the Universe, Mi Chata, who sins? Amar Lo, and God replied, V'chi Dildor Ani. Am I a Dildor? Am I a, as I translated it there, using the Greek, which I don't know how to pronounce properly, but Delator. Am I a Delator, God says to him. So the way Rashi explains the word Delator on the Gemara is a Rochel, a peddler of stories. God says, it's not for me to tell Lashon Hara. You want to know who did it? I'm not speaking Lashon Hara. Go figure it out. Does that make any sense?
Not really.
Why?
When God gave him the info, he tells him everything.
But not only that.
He could have told him and then made him go through all this for a show for the nation.
That's true also. So that's...
He's eventually going to tell him.
You're going to have this big public display. You're not going to tattle to Yehoshua. You're just going to tattle to the whole nation. What does that mean? You want Yehoshua to find out. And it's not like you're telling him, go do detective work. You know, this is a very hard thing to understand. And there actually is. I saw a comment by Rabbi Meir Zuckerman who claims that it's not... Don't take that Gemara literally. In context, it's really a medrash that means to teach us lessons about Lashon Hara. And they're borrowing this story as an opportunity to do that. But I think there's more to it. If you take a look at source number 5 from the resource of all knowledge, Wikipedia, the term delator is not a term made up in the Gemara. As I said, it's a Greek term. And in fact, it referred to a particular role in Roman times. In Roman history, properly, one who gave notice to the treasury officials of monies that had become due to the imperial fisc. That's what a delator was. The delator was somebody who told the tax collectors, somebody owes you money. Right? There was somebody who had tried to sneak it.
Who would want that job?
Yeah, he's ratting out to the IRS. That's this delator.
That's a horrible job.
Well, it wasn't a job, per se. It was someone who did this and then got rewarded for it.
Acquired the title?
Yeah. This special meaning was extended to those who lodged information as to punishable offenses. Right? Don't think of a snitch. It's a whistleblower.
What?
It's a whistleblower. So anybody who lodged information about a punishable offense, and further to those who brought a public accusation, whether true or not, against any person, especially with the object of getting money. Although the word delator itself for common informer is confined to imperial times, the right of public accusation had long existed. This is an old idea before the Roman Empire. When exercised from patriotic and disinterested motives, its effects were beneficial. But the moment the principle of reward was introduced, right, you get rewarded for blowing the whistle, this was no longer the case. Sometimes the accuser was rewarded with the rights of citizenship, a place in the Senate, or share of the property of the accused. At the end of the Republican period, Cicero expresses his opinion that such accusations should be undertaken only in interests of the state or for other urgent reasons. Under the Roman Empire, the system became openly corrupt, and so on. Once you know that that's what the Gemara thinks of when it says dilator, you understand, I think, a little bit more about the import of the statement. What is God saying here when he says, I'm not going to tell you the name? He says, I'm not a dilator. What is the Gemara really saying? It's petty. It's beneath me. I'm going to be like someone who rats out somebody to the tax authorities, you know, as though I have something personal to gain. I'm not willing to be in that role where you're going to come to the nation tomorrow and you're going to say to them, God told me who took his stuff. Right, which is essentially what it would amount to. I'm not willing to play that role. Rather, the role is going to have to be, you're going to have to go through this whole process. You're going to find out anyway. And frankly, I'm the agent of the way you're going to find out regardless. But it's not going to be me being the person who reports to the government, you know, who took the stuff. That's the idea. Follow?
I find it very odd.
Yeah. Because?
Just the comment, just bringing it in at all.
Yeah.
Just doesn't.
Because? No, what's odd about it?
I don't know, I need to think about it, but it just doesn't seem that it seems inappropriate, even just bringing that word into this kind of conversation seems inappropriate. And in the same sentence as God.
Because, I mean, what would be inappropriate about bringing that into the sentence? In other words, the fact that the dilator is so far from what God is supposed to be?
Mm-hmm. It's a derogatory term.
Yeah.
It's negative.
Right.
It's negative, it's human, it's base, it's low.
Yeah.
It's all the negatives.
Right. And but that's exactly the point. That's exactly the point. And God's response to you, in other words, what the Gemara is really doing, we're not privy to the conversation between God and Yoshua. The Gemara doesn't actually, this isn't the case of Ruach HaKodesh informing the Gemara of this was the conversation between Hashem and Yoshua. I don't believe that that's what's going on in this particular passage. What's going on is we have a fundamental problem, which is, why didn't Hashem tell Yoshua? And the Gemara is framing what the conversation could have been. Yoshua says, well, why don't you just tell me? It'd be a lot easier. And Hashem's response is, because that will put me in this position of being the petty person who's going to try to get profit for himself by ratting out somebody who's done something wrong.
But he wouldn't tell them who it was in the end anyway.
But he has to, because the sin's got to be corrected.
So then I don't see a difference if he tells him or if he tells him tomorrow. Based on that, I don't see...
Well, the way it's going to happen tomorrow, it's much more the nation trying to find it out and God helping them. As opposed to, you know...
No, God revealing who it was. I like the whole thing where you have to do it by levels and attack that whole thing. But this whole thing...
I mean, if the Romans knock on your door and say, we know that somebody took something, tell us who it is, you're not a rat, so to speak, and you're not self-interested, which is really more the point. The point is not so much being the rat. The point is the self-interest of this delator who wants to be rewarded, right? So if they knocked on your door and said, tell us, you're not doing this for your own gain. You're telling them because the Roman authorities are knocking at your door. When you're asked, it's different from volunteering it because you want to get a reward. And I think that's the difference between telling Yehoshua the night before, where Hashem volunteers it, or answering the question the next day when Yehoshua is trying to figure it out. That to me is the difference. I agree that it's a troubling Gemara. That's why I went hunting for meanings of Delator. But I think that that's what's going on.
Wouldn't it show Hashem's like what Ora was saying before about like that it would show that he's behind Yehoshua, like almost if like Yehoshua presented to the nation who it was, and then God backed him up by this little like charade thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, wouldn't that show almost like more of the point that Hashem's behind Yehoshua? And yes, Yehoshua, like, if he knows beforehand a little bit,
maybe.
No.
Maybe. Well, I mean, it would make Yehoshua look less clueless.
Right, and more connected to Hashem.
And more connected to Hashem. Yeah.
Or Hashem could have told him and then not told him to tell.
Right.
Meaning there are ways to tell him and not make sure Hashem is there, you know.
Well, if Hashem tells...
Still do the point. Like, and still have the whole...
What's the point of telling Yehoshua but telling him not to tell? What would be the advantage then?
I don't know.
I mean, no, because your point about emphasizing Hashem is with Yehoshua,
right.
I think that's why we ask the question of why doesn't God tell him? And there has to be a real motivation on the other side. Whether the motivation is to go through this process with collective responsibility. Although, again, he could have gone through that anyway. Correct. So that's not necessary. The process of giving Achan the chance for tshuva, if Yehoshua...
He still could have known. And still not
no, because then he's not telling. Then he's not.
But no, he wouldn't.
That's the knowing and not telling.
That's
right.
The knowing and not
but then again, why tell him if he's not going to do anything about it? And it's not going to. I wouldn't see that as being advantageous. If I take the approach of Abarbanel, you want it to be a public revelation so that Yehoshua won't be accused of contriving it. Yes, if Yehoshua announces the name and then is backed up this way, that can still help. To my mind, all of these points, in the end, are important points in their own right, but what I actually see is a different theme altogether on this, which is the theme we established from the beginning of the Perek. Well, collective responsibility, but also the idea that you, as a nation, have to take care of your own business. You're now a nation. Part of this collective responsibility theme is you're in charge now. You have to run the country. You can't default to let God worry about it. I brought you a quote on source number 6, a short item that I saw written by Rabbi Yuval Shurlo, in which he was asked this question of why doesn't God tell Yehoshua? And his answer is, Chovat chasifat ra mutelat al Yehoshua v'lo al HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When I'm quoting a modern Israeli rabbi, I feel like I have to suddenly switch into Mivtas Ravid. The obligation of exposing evil is placed on Yehoshua, not on God. It's Yehoshua's job. He says, you know, if God had told him in the beginning, before they went to war with Ai, no one would have died. Right? That would have been a good thing. But he says, God does not remove from a person the responsibility of clarifying, determining the truth. That's your job. It's not God's job. And God will not become a talebearer. He says this is part of Tzelem Elokim, the divine image in man, is to clarify what's gone wrong, to determine where the truth is and where falsehood is. And until he does this, the price is going to be very high. That's the way it works. The human being has a responsibility. It reminds me of the phrase that is repeated over and over again in the Torah, "Ubi'arta hara mikirbecha." You have to eliminate evil from your midst. It's your job. Part of the Jewish people coming into this land and becoming the controllers of the land is that they have to learn to do this. They have to be sensitive to when something is wrong, and they have to act to correct it, and there will be a high price in the event that they fail to do so. The war was up to you, Yehoshua. The decision to put to put this stuff in Cherem was up to you, Yehoshua. So you have to solve the problem. That's the idea that I see. In addition to all these other ideas, which are great, about giving Achan the chance for tshuva, about the sense of collective responsibility built up through all the levels of the families, those are all valid. But I think there is this point that I think Rav Sherlo is correct about, that you have to take charge, Yoshua. I'm not going to make this easy for you. I'm going to help, because at the end of the day, what Yoshua is doing is really not good at detective work, right? Like, if God doesn't help, then everybody walks in front of the Choshen, and then what? Or in front of the Aron, and then what? Yeah. So, but right. But there has to be something there that works with your kid. Doesn't work like beyond that. So that's the. So there you go. So that's the prescription that Hashem gives Yehoshua. Now, Yehoshua, we don't know what Yehoshua does that day. And this goes back to the question of what they actually knew, what the nation knew at this stage. We know that Yehoshua has to prepare them. And the commentators suggest preparing them if they're going to walk in front of the Choshen, in front of the Aron, so maybe they have to go to Mikvah. There has to be some kind of sanctification involved if they're going to be involved in this ritual. But we don't know if Yehoshua actually tells them that someone has taken from the Cherem. We don't know if they are aware of what is at stake here, or if this is just like, okay, we lost the war, we're in a panic, Yehoshua said go to Mikvah, like check our mezuzah, you know, and then the next day something's going to happen. Well, Pasuk Tet Zayin, Vayashkem Yehoshua Baboker, Yehoshua gets up early in the morning. Right? The idea of getting up early in the morning is something seen throughout the Torah as a demonstration of zrizos, of energy, of alacrity. So he gets up early in the morning. Vayakrev es Yisrael lishvatav. He brings the Jews by their tribes. Vayilached shevet Yehuda. And the tribe of Yehuda is caught. Okay.
Single that.
Yeah, or picked, right? Fine. Caught.
You can
see that. Yeah, you can see the people in Yehuda. Yehoshua really didn't tell them what was going on. They're like, pick me. Oh, great, they picked us.
I had no idea, because when they want to try and do tshuva or like figure out who did it. Or
it's a good question.
They didn't know what they were doing. They didn't know if it was good or bad.
Right. As of now, I don't know what they know.
Did the instructions say that he should get up and tell them these instructions? They would have known already.
What it actually said was sanctify the nation or separate, dedicate the nation, because, so declares the God of Israel, you have cherem among you. So yeah, no, it does sound like they know from the day before. From this it does sound like they know the day before. Which means that Achan now knows that he's in trouble. Okay, oh well, it would have been interesting if they didn't know.
Do you think that they would start to try to figure out on their own?
Right.
Well, in any case, that's true also. But
well, you said I kind of pictured, you know how like when Yosef puts the stuff back in Benjamin's pouch and everything, yeah. And then all of a sudden the brothers go, was it you? Like each shaven amongst themselves kind of would try to huddle together.
Right, they're going to spend the night trying to figure it out. Right.
It's like when your bunk gets docked, you try to figure out who did it. You
want to
know who to blame?
Okay. I'm not going to start telling him. Vayakrev es mishpachas Yehuda. So, they then bring the families of Yehuda. Vayokod es mishpachas hazarchi. And the family of Zerach is caught. And again, when we ask the question in the beginning of the parak, why list Achan's whole family? So, the idea, the philosophical idea we presented is that it's meant to teach about collective responsibility. But the simple explanation is because here it's going to matter. Here the lineage matters. We need to know Yehuda was caught, Zerach was caught. Yeah, that's Achan's line. Vayakrev es mishpachas hazarchi lagvarim. He brought the families of Zerach by the males, and vayilached Zavdi. And Zavdi got caught. Vayakrev es beiso lagvarim. They brought Zavdi's household by theirs. Vayilached Achan ben Karmi ben Zavdi ben Zerach lemate Yehuda. There he is. What do you mean?
Obviously, if we just went down, so obviously he can go back up.
Right, but I think now they're emphasizing the point, this is the one from all of these people we just mentioned. Right, no, but I think that it's just trying to give us this, yeah, Achan was caught, Karmi was caught, Zaldi was caught, Zerach was caught, this is the way it worked. That's the way I would read it, although once again, if we want to say it's an echo of this collective responsibility, we certainly can. Yeah. There's also more going on in this lineage thing that I want to come back to in a minute. But this is catching the thief. But Vayomer Yehoshua, look at Pasuk Yetet. Yehoshua says, Vayomer Yehoshua al Achan, Bini, my son, suggesting that Achan is a youngster, which I guess in terms of having all these generations between him and Yehuda, maybe he was. Bini, my son, Simna Chavod Hashem Elokei Yisrael. Give honor to God, to Hashem, the God of Israel. V'tein lo todah. Todah does not mean thank you. Right? Todah means acknowledgement, like vidui, same root. So he says, admit it. Confess. V'haged nali me'asisa. Please tell me what you did. Al techached mimeni. Do not withhold it from me. Okay. I want to pause with that for a second. We listed the lineage. So we've said the lineage could be for various reasons. But there's another element here in this lineage. Yehoshua comes from what Shevet? Do you remember? Yehoshua is from... Did we actually say it in the beginning of the Sefer? I don't remember. Well, Yehoshua... Sorry?
Did you for sure know?
No, we do know. Yehoshua is a Ephraim. Because when he was listed in Parsha Shlach as one of the Meraglim, right? So we said, you know, it was Lamatei Ephraim. Actually, Lamatei Yosef. Anyway. Yehoshua is from Ephraim. Ephraim is from... is from Yosef, but from Rachel. Right? Who is Achan from? Who is from?
Leah.
It's the Rachel Leah thing. The Rachel Leah split that we find first, you know, when they get married to Yaakov and you have this whole thing that he wanted to marry one, he ended up marrying the other, continues with their kids, right? In the beginning of Vayeshev, Yosef is not playing with the children of Leah. And that leads to Shimon and Levi, the sons of Leah, selling Yosef, that saga there. It doesn't end there, bless you. That continues through Jewish history. So that after Shlomo's time, the Jewish people are split in two between Yehuda and Yisrael, right? Who is the leader of the northern kingdom? Yeravam ben Nevat from, if I remember correctly, Ephraim. Right? Ephraim has the northern kingdom. And Shlomo's son Rechavam is from Yehuda, from Leah. Shaul is the first king. Shaul is from Binyamin, from Rachel. Yehuda, David HaMelech from Yehuda takes over. That split is a constant split within Tanakh. There are other cases as well for this. This has the potential to be another chapter in the saga, in which it's Yehoshua representing Ephraim, versus Achan representing Yehuda, Rachel versus Leah. And that may be another reason why you need this goral, why you need this lottery, is to say, this isn't about that. This isn't the descendants of Rachel versus the descendants of Leah. God is telling you what this is really about. Just a thought. Notice also, Malvin points out, the language varies slightly through this. Just noting it quickly. When the Shvatim go through in Pasuk Tetzayin, Vayakreva Yisrael Lishvatav, right? And then when he does Mishpachat Zerchi, it's Lagivarim, and Beito, Lagivarim. But when he did Mishpachat Yehuda, there was no La mentioned. It wasn't Lemishpachotav or something like that. Some of them suggests that it's because Zerach is the younger. Yehuda has two kids, Peretz and Zerach. So therefore, he's the last one, and so that has a different listing. I'm not quite sure why that would mean the law would be or wouldn't be, but that's what he suggests to account for it: is that Zerach is the last one. So Yehoshua says to him, "I want you to confess." Now the Gemara actually says that we learn from here that when someone is executed by a Beis Din, they're supposed to secure the confession first. But take a look at Rashi on this. Source number 7. Rashi is building off what we saw already in source number 2. He says, Hitchilahutzi la'az al hagoral. Achan started to cast aspersions on the lottery to say, yeah, everybody knows someone's going to have to be caught. It was just happened to be me. Amar lo simna kavod. So Yeshua says, give honor. Bevakasha mimcha, he says, please. Al totzi laz ala goralot. Don't cast aspersions on the lottery. We need lotteries. Shebo asida ha'aretz lechalek. Because that's how we're going to divide up the land. We're dividing up the land based on a goral. Imagine if, when we're going to start dividing up the land, someone's going to say it was rigged. They got the seashore because Yeshua wanted to give them the seashore because they bribed Yeshua. There's no end to that possibility. So he's asking him to admit it for Yeshua's sake. Not to atone, but rather for Yeshua's sake. Malbim suggests that there's also the element of atonement involved, but that's not what you see here. But interesting, in terms of in Pasuk Yotet, look at the way he asks him to do it. Yeshua says to Achan, right, Simna kavod Hashem Elokei Yisrael, give honor to Hashem, Tein lo toda, you should acknowledge it to him, V'haged na li me'asisa, tell me what you did. Does he really want Achan to tell him? He wants Achan to tell the nation. So why does he say, tell me?
He's being sensitive to him. It's easier to talk one-on-one than to get up in front of everyone and say, I did this. But
right. So that's what Abarbanel sees. It's a psychological thing. It's a lot easier to say to him, look, you don't have to tell the nation, just tell me.
My son.
Yeah.
Like,
that's true. He said Bini. It's an interesting thing that he says Bini. I didn't think about that.
And also now. Like, it's almost like...
Well, not could be please and not could be now. Not could be either one. Which you would also say to your kid. But the...
he's misleading him all that, but don't worry. Just tell me everything will be okay kind of thing.
Tell me what you really did.
Like... And then we almost like, you know, something you said he's a young boy, maybe, who knows, and I feel bad for him.
Right. I mean, he's not a young...
I feel bad for him, but I mean, you know,
he has a wife. He can't be hiding.
Right, no, he's not young. He has a wife and kids.
Oh, he has a wife and kids. Oh, okay.
Yeah. But, I think
that's happened to him. He's like, just tell me it's okay, you know.
Well, except if we say that Yeshua did inform them all the day before, he had to have read to the end of the sentence.
So he knew.
Yeah. Which was why he didn't admit it. You know, he's going to admit it now, though. Look at what happens in Pasuk Chaf. Vayan Achan es Yehoshua vayomar. Achan answered Yehoshua, and he said, Omna, it's true, Anochi chatasi l'Hashem Elokei Yisrael. I sinned to Hashem, God of Israel, v'chazos asisi. I did like this and like this. So, Pasuk Chaf Aleph. Va'era bashalal, I saw in the spoils, aderet shinar achas tova, a beautiful robe of shinar. Shinar is the land of Babel, of Babylon. So beautiful Babylonian robe. Umasayim shkalim kasef, as well as 200 silver shekel. Lashon zahav echad, as well as a tongue of gold. Chamishim shkalim mishkala, weighing 50 shekel. So not only is he telling him what he stole, but he knows the weight. Like this is... Yeah. Va'echmedeim, I desired them, va'ekachem, and I took them. V'hinam tmunim ba'aretz b'soch ha'ahali, and they are buried in the ground under my tent. That yud at the end is odd, but not the only time we get something like this in Tanakh. The ha'ahali, the tent of mine. Va'akesef tachteha, and the silver is on the bottom. The silver is underneath everything. So there's a lot here that requires explanation. We're going to do this a little briefly, just in the interests of time. But first of all, when he does this, when he presents what he has done, Malbim sees self-justification in it. First of all, kazos v'kazos asisi. I did like this and like this. On a pshat level, simple level, it means what he's about to tell you in the next sentence, where he lays out exactly what he's done. But the Gemara also suggests in Sanhedrin, the same discussion in Sanhedrin that we've been having all along, that he actually violated the cherem from multiple wars. This wasn't one war, and he took it from one set of spoils, but this is actually accumulated. The only reason they got punished now and not earlier is because they don't become a nation until they cross the Yarden. And it's only now that collective responsibility is actually going to kick in, so the previous sins don't weigh on anybody. But then he takes from the spoils of Yericho, now... they're actually going to be held communally responsible.
That he has, not necessarily from here.
Correct. He's actually been doing this for a while. It's always the way it works. You know, you find out about somebody and then you dig up all the other stuff.
Yeah.
Sorry? Yes, well, maybe. I mean, given the fact that he hasn't used it, Samu Bechlehem, maybe. But the Malbim also sees self-justification in this. He says, Kazos Vekazos Asisi, I did it a bunch of times. You know, the first time, okay, I knew it was wrong. But after that, it became just, you know, normal for me to do it. And that's the way people work. That's the way their minds work. As the Maran Moed Katan says, you do something wrong once, you do it twice, it's nases lo geheter. It already becomes like it's permitted in your eyes because you've already come up with your justifications and why this is an okay thing to do. He says, I took from the shalal, I saw in the shalal. Shalal is a term we use for permitted spoils. So, yeah, at first I thought it was permitted. Yeah, I thought it was fine. Aderet Shinar, it's from Bavel. It wasn't from Yericho.
He's trying to get out of it.
Yeah, well, not get out of it exactly, but mitigate it.
It's built up.
Yeah. I thought it was like Babylonian. Not, you know, it wasn't local, so therefore maybe it's okay. It was Tova. It was really good. And it was the silver and gold. And I thought to myself, you burned the Cherem. What are you going to do with the silver and gold? You know, you can't burn silver and gold. And it's buried in my tent. I didn't use it. It was all there, and the silver's underneath. I haven't actually used any of it. That's all Malbim read. Sorry?
He buried it.
Yes.
It's not like he let it out that everybody should see because it was perfectly fine. Right?
Yes.
He didn't use it.
So right. There are two ways.
He's aware that what he did was not okay.
Yeah. He's trying to spin. He's trying to spin it.
But you think so much detail about like the weight and all that. So
yeah.
I don't feel it's a bit of a confession. In a way, he says, I started with this lowly, lowly in quotes thing, this robe, and then I go to the silver, and then I got to the gold. It's almost like a progression of
could be
of value, and he's giving the weight. So it makes me feel like he's sort of really coming clean, because he could have said, I took a bunch of stuff without giving the weight, without talking about the...
Right. You could definitely read it that way. That it's the, you know, sort of the detail.
But like, again, maybe it's almost like that, one of the steps of tshuva, when you admit something,
yeah,
you confess, and
yeah,
he still gets to
it. He's giving excuses.
Yes.
He's not a fit really of his part.
Yes.
Should he have not been saved?
Well, when... Yeah. Let's take it out of the cherem context. When someone breaks into someone's house and he steals something, right? And then he comes into court and they say, you stole, and he says, I'm really sorry. Right? Does he not have to now suffer whatever the punishment is?
Yes, but, you know, like, not to, well, you know, David Melech also had a very bad sin. He admitted he sinned. He didn't get killed. I'm just saying, not to compare, but it seems so harsh, you know, he
right,
didn't admit it.
No, absolutely true. And there they lose the child.
No, I know.
Right,
David and Basha.
Like, not getting killed doesn't necessarily mean he's happy.
Right, right.
So it's, and leaving aside the whole question of the sin and whatever, that's its own discussion.
But people sin in the Torah.
And they tend to die. People in the Torah who sin, I mean, you know, I'm cheating now by the fact that we're only in Parshas Vayera. But like the track record so far is that when people sin, except for Migdal Bavel, which is this odd anomaly, you know, they don't get very far. But in Achan's case, it's worse. And that was emphasized by the Psukim before, when it was not just that he took from the Cherem, but he caused the Jews as a whole to suffer. And that's a big piece of why this has to happen. There's more to see on this. I wanted to add in still a couple of sources. All right, we'll come back to it next time, because I wanted to see source number 8 still. And some... Yeah, we'll stop with where we are now. Next time, God willing, we'll finish the Perek and then move into the 8th, which is the sequel to these events.